Thank you for that opportunity to get organized. I actually figured out what I was going to say in that small time period. Yeah.
Wow.
Just kidding. Okay, a small survey. You don't have to raise your hand, but think to yourself, and if you feel like raising your hand, feel free to do so. How many of you said I love you today? All right. How many of you heard someone else say I love you today? How many of you experienced the giving or receiving of love today without the words? And if you sat on a healing stool and you didn't raise your hand, then shame on you. Because I know that's one of our optimum ways of experiencing love here in the church, is when we sit back there and let those who are working with healing love us. And they allow God to love us through them. Last month, I talked about my relationship with God. It was a part two of Dan Hare's talk the week before that. And tonight is sort of part three, if we take Dan's talk as part one. I said in my talk that my relationship with God was such that I could replace the word God with love, and that love is an energy, and that therefore when I say I believe in God, I'm saying I believe in love. But in the intervening couple weeks, I got to thinking, what the heck is love? I mean, it's a concept, and certainly there's a biblical definition in Corinthians. Love is patient and kind. This particular translation goes on to say it's not envious, it's not pompous, it's not inflated, it's not rude. It does not seek its own interests. It is not quick-tempered and does not brood over injury. It does not rejoice over the wrong, but rejoices with the truth. It bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. This is what love is in Corinthians. Well, I have to bear all things and endure all things at work. Does that mean I love my job? Maybe not. No, it also says patient and kind, and that kind of lets out work. Okay, so. I looked in Webster's. It says love has 9 different definitions, of which I'm only going to briefly touch on 5. Love is a strong affection for another, an attraction, affection, and tenderness felt by lovers, affection based on admiration, benevolence, or common interest. Warm attachment, enthusiasm, or devotion. Unselfish, loyal, and benevolent concern for the good of another, as the fatherly concern of God for humankind, or a brotherly concern for others. Could be a person's adoration of God, or even a God or personification of love. What does all that mean? I like to think of love as, first of all, a thought with an idea behind it. Love is a concept. It's also the energy that I spoke about last month. But most of all, when we speak about love, we speak about the feeling of love. And what is the feeling of love like? Well, it can be, depending on the kind of love, you know, if it's a love for a brother or a love for a lover, it might be different. But it can be warm, it can be cool, it can be very cool. It can be something that you actually feel in your heart. And, you know, hearts aren't supposed to have sensory organs, isn't supposed to be a sensory organ. But I know most of us have had the experience of actually feeling pain or joy in our heart, where it feels like there are nerve endings associated with the organ. One of my favorite songs that defines love in a way that's central to all of us is that song, The Rose, that we sang at church a couple weeks ago. Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Love is overwhelming, It's a river that drowns tender shoots of reed. Some say, love, it is a razor that leaves your soul to bleed. It can be painful. Some say, love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need, something without which we starve and die of starvation. I say, love, it is a flower, and you its only seed. Love is something that can grow, and we are the seeds of that growth. It grows from us. The song goes on with great words. When the night has been too lonely and the road has been too long, and you think that love is only for the lucky and the strong, just remember in the winter, far beneath the bitter snows, lies the seed that with the sun's love in the spring becomes the rose. A rose is a wonderful image of love because it has both soft, tender leaves or petals and thorns. Love encompasses both the tenderness and the beauty and the sharpness and the pain. Now, why do we care? Why am I here tonight talking about love? I'm here tonight talking about love because I believe that love is vitally important to our soul's growth and to our survival on this planet. Now, most of you have probably seen the commercial on TV that says, this is an egg. And then they crack the egg into the frying pan and they say, this is your brain. Sorry. This is an egg. This is your brain. Okay, it's an egg. Crack it into the frying pan. This is your brain on drugs. Well, I have a corollary to that. I don't know if you can see this too well back there, but this is a really rough, jagged piece of wood. This is your life. This is a very polished, smooth, beautiful, well-grained, defined piece of wood. This is your life on love. A friend of mine actually did the polishing of this piece of wood. She put the elbow grease of love into it. She demonstrated her love with me in the hours that she spent polishing this wood to make it beautiful on this side. So it's a wonderful metaphor for me. This is my life. This is my life on love. Now, there is a biblical description of this concept, actually. It's the parable of the talents in Matthew. Talents in the time of the Bible were actually coins. So you could associate this story with money, but I prefer to think of talents as attributes that are gifts to us, skills, abilities, if you will. So a man was going on a journey, and he called his servants to him and gave them his possessions and said to the one, I give you 5 talents, to another 2 talents, and to the third 1 talent. And he gave them to them according to their own abilities. So you could argue that if you are available for loving, then you get more of the love, more of the talents. The one who received 5 talents traded them in and gained 5 more talents. The one who received 2 talents gained 2 more talents, but the one who received 1 talent went away, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. Now the master came back and settled the accounts, and the one who got 5 and had 10 said, Master, see, I have doubled your money. And the master said, well done, you were faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things. Enter into the joy of your master. The one who had 2 now had 4. He showed the master, and the master said the same thing. You were successful with a few. I will give you more. The one who had 1 said, well, I didn't trust anybody or anything, so I buried mine. Stan would probably argue with the literal translation of the text, but that's how I choose to interpret it. And the master said, you lazy so-and-so, you wasted my money. and your time. And to quote directly from Matthew 25, verse 29, to everyone who has, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have, even what he does have shall be taken away. Now, what if we substitute love for talents or money? From the one who has love, more shall be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who does not have love, even what he does have shall be taken away. What does that say to us? It says to us, we better have love, because if we don't, we'll have even less of it. You see this in the touch syndrome with babies. Babies can't live without touch, and I sometimes think adults can't either. And the failure to thrive is caused by a lack of touch oftentimes. So if we give of love of ourselves, then we get more, and if we don't have it, then we have less. It's either a positive or a negative. It's simple mathematics. Do you want to have love? Do you want to be able to continue to raise your hand as I ask the questions about did you or did you not experience love today? Or do you want to be sitting back there going, no, nobody loves me and I'm not going to love anybody either? The point is, we have to give it away before we can get it. And Rumi said, if you've opened your loving to God's love, you're helping people you don't know and have never seen. But Rumi missed the point there as far as I'm concerned, because the first person that I have to love is myself. If I'm giving away love out there, that's all very well and good. But until I can give it in here, then I'm not really experiencing it. Another Persian mystic, Hafiz, wrote a poem about a problem that we all have. And I want you to listen to this poem and think of yourself as both the I that is reading it and the you that I'm talking about, and see how it applies to you. The poem is called We Should Talk About This Problem. There is a beautiful creature living in a hole you have dug. There is a beautiful creature living in a hole I have dug. So at night, I set fruits and grains and little pots of wine and milk beside your soft earthen mounds. And I often sing. Be still, my dear, you do not come out. I have fallen in love with someone who hides inside you. I have fallen in love with someone who hides inside me. We should talk about this problem. Otherwise, I will never leave you alone. I hope that we can be on both sides of that equation, that we can see that we're hiding inside of ourselves, and that until we love ourselves with metaphorical fruits and grains and little pots of milk and wine, that we won't come out into the light, into the sun, into the joy of love. But there is someone who does love the someone hiding inside of us, and that is our soul. Our soul loves itself, if you will, in the body of flesh that we've taken on in this lifetime. And our soul will never leave us alone, because our soul represents the God part of us that is not going to let us go. When we love a person, we accept him or her exactly as is, the lovely with the unlovely, the strong along with the fearful, and the true mixed in with the facade. Of course, the only way we can do it is by accepting ourselves that way. Mr. Rogers. I'm probably the only person you know that'll give you Rumi and Hafiz and Mr. Rogers in the same talk. And I'm proud of it. When we love a person, we accept him or her exactly as is. And of course, the only way we can do it is by accepting ourselves that way. So do we accept ourselves? Do we allow others to love us? Well, here's where my story comes in. I probably never said I love you to anyone outside of my immediate family until I was in my mid to late 30s. And I still question what love means to me. I read a lot of romance novels, and of course romance novels give you a very distorted view of love. Very distorted. No, very, very distorted. Not to say it's not fun, but it's more about passion and lust, okay, than it is about love, because, thank you, Jane. You must have read a couple yourself.
My mom and I were younger.
I'm not saying passion can't be love. I'm just saying that love doesn't have to be passion. And I'm not certainly very experienced in passion, quite frankly. It is my story I'm talking about. So I've gotten a distorted view of love throughout, you know, decades of reading romance novels and confusing love and passion. And then I came to this church, and I met the Reverend Millie here. And it's no coincidence that I'm talking about love during the week of Reverend Millie's birthday. Because Millie showed me, in a way that I had never experienced before, what love is. And she always jokes about she loved me first. Well, she did. She had to, because somebody had to. I didn't know how to give it away because I didn't know what it was. And Millie showed me what it is. And she did that by seeing the best in me, by expecting the best of me, and by giving me an opportunity to be my best. And that's not all. She just is loving. You know, Millie is an acronym. An acronym is a word made up of the first letters of other words, for those of you who may not speak acronym. But Millie is an acronym that stands for Magnificent Individual Living Love in Every Way. And Millie showed me something that Hafiz says is the astonishing light of your own being. He says, I wish I could show you when you are lonely or in darkness the astonishing light of your own being. And that's what Millie did for me. She held up the mirror and she said, Lindy, look at this. This is astonishingly beautiful and worth loving, and I love it. And I looked in the same mirror and I went, whoa. Maybe she's right. Maybe there is something there worth loving. And I decided I would become that individual that Millie thought I was all the time. So that's my goal. I'm working toward becoming the person that Millie thinks I am. That's a pretty worthy goal, don't you know? Because Millie is seeing the God self in me and holding me to that standard of being the closest to God that I can become. And if I can do that, then everything else is just talent, you know. Because as much talent as we have in the sense of money or in the sense of ability, the only talent that really counts is the ability to give and receive love. And if we can open ourselves up to the receiving of it, then it makes it so much easier to be on the giving end. Because even though we know that the law of attraction says what you give away, you get back, heaped up and running over, what I know to be true is that you have to have a full cup before it can overflow. And if you hang around this church long enough, and if you hang around this lady long enough, you'll realize that all you have to do is be the best you can be, and your cup will fill to overflowing with love. So I'd like to leave you with this thought. Say I love you every day. If there's no one out there to say it to yourself in a mirror. Encourage other people to say I love you to you. The way you do that is by saying it to them first. Because it's almost reactive. I love you. Oh, yeah, I love you too. Well, reactive is better than not at all, right? And more importantly, have an experience of love every day, of the giving or receiving. And that doesn't necessarily require verbal interaction. You can pray every day and have it be an expression of love. I have a very dear friend who was just diagnosed with colon cancer. In my heart, I say to him, I love you. And that's the body of my prayer. I don't have to say, God heal him, or please give him 5 more years. All I have to say is, I love you. And God knows that that's what I mean. And that's just as good as any more complex or detailed prayer can be. Keep it simple. As you might have noticed by now, I'm in love with Hafiz. He lived in the 14th century in Persia. He delighted in loving God and loving other humans and showing other humans how to love God and to love themselves. And I want to leave you with this last Hafiz couplet. Start seeing everything as God, but keep it a secret. I love you all. God bless. And thank you for giving me this time.